Blog Talk Radio.
This is the news in brief from the United Nations. UN-appointed independent human rights experts issued an alert on Friday that the latest measures targeting women and girls by Afghanistan's de facto authorities may be a crime against humanity. In at least one region, young women were recently blocked from entering their university, the experts said, adding that confining women to their homes was tantamount to imprisonment. Men have reportedly suffered brutal beatings by Taliban officers for accompanying women wearing colourful clothing, according to the experts, who also noted that for months, women human rights defenders have been increasingly targeted, beaten and arrested. To Ethiopia, where the UN World Food Programme, WFP, said that despite improved aid access to the war-torn north, climate change and drought gravely threaten millions with malnutrition. Following the signing of a peace agreement between armed Tigray opposition groups and government forces earlier this month, WFP has delivered over 2,400 tons of food, medical nutrition and other life-saving supplies to Tigray, enough to feed around 170,000 people. While all four road corridors into Tigray have reopened, deliveries are not matching the scale of need, the UN agency said, appealing for access to all parts of the region to deliver food and nutrition assistance to 2.3 million people. For the first time, UN Humanitarian Air Service flights are operating into Shire Airport in Tigray, carrying passengers and relief items. To Geneva, finally, where states are preparing to gather on Monday to review the 1972 Biological Weapons Convention. It prohibits the development, production, acquisition, transfer, stockpiling and use of biological and toxin weapons. Key issues include kickstarting deadlock discussions on a verification mechanism to prevent countries from developing biothreats. Here's the designated president of the review conference, Italy's Leonardo Bencini.
You see, a lot of countries still want to restart negotiations on a legally binding protocols. I don't think we can find a consensus around this, but I believe that we can find a consensus around, as I said, the way forward to restart discussions on the issue of verification and compliance.
Unlike nuclear weapons development, almost any scientific facility could be weaponized to make a bio threat. Ambassador Bencini insisted that COVID-19 had also highlighted the need for the Biological Weapons Convention to be updated to take into account the danger of a global pandemic-like threat to humans, animals, and plant life. One of the new measures under consideration is for an open and transparent international scientific code of conduct to make it more difficult for anybody to develop programs without other colleagues knowing this, Ambassador Bencini said. Daniel Johnson, UN News.
That you grow older, you're just gonna be like, I do not care. Like, I don't care at all what you think.
If there's no shows because there's no venue, then you have to go away to perform, and not easy, you know.
And that there's no way I'm chopping my hair off because you want me to. I didn't do it. And then they ended up wanting me because, like, this bitch is a badass, you know?
Around the world, women are producing incredible art, overcoming challenges such as human rights abuses, climate change, inequality, or discrimination. I'm Laura Quiñones, the host of Amplify Her, a new podcast from the United Nations, which is committed to empowering women and protecting their rights. In this 10-part series, you'll be hearing inspiring musicians from a wide range of backgrounds talking about their challenges in a male-dominated industry, how they overcome barriers, and what drives them to continue creating art.
We'll hear some amazing music from Amel, best known as the voice of the Tunisian Revolution.
Alina Mourang, a young artist who is keeping traditional music alive in Borneo.
Hey. and Fausia, who is embracing her Moroccan roots.
We are excited to share these stories and sounds with you, so get ready to subscribe, turn off the volume, and amplify her.
This is the news in brief from the United Nations. The Human Rights Council backed a call on Thursday to investigate rights violations in Iran amid ongoing deadly violence against protesters there. It comes after UN Rights Chief Volker Türk told the council that Iranian security forces used live ammunition, birdshot and other metal pellets, tear gas and batons against demonstrators.
It pains me to see what is happening in the country. The images of children killed, of women beaten in the streets, of people sentenced to death. We have seen waves of protests over the past years calling for justice, equality, dignity and respect for human rights. They have been met with violence and repression. The unnecessary and disproportionate use of force must come to an end.
Iran's protests were originally sparked by the death in custody in September of 22-year-old Jina Mahsa Amini after her arrest by Iran's so-called morality police for not wearing her hijab properly. Mr. Türk said that the protest movement had spread to a reported 150 cities and 140 universities in all provinces of Iran, and that more than 300 people have been killed, including at least 40 children. An alert now from the UN Health Agency, WHO, that nearly 40 million youngsters are dangerously at risk from the growing threat of measles. The warning is linked to the fact that in 2021, so many children missed their first and second doses of measles vaccine during the COVID pandemic. 2021 also saw an estimated 9 million cases of measles and 128,000 deaths worldwide. 22 countries were also hit by large and disruptive outbreaks, according to the World Health Organization, which said that the coronavirus continues to disrupt life-saving immunization programs today. The UN Health Agency noted that only 81% of the world's children have received their first measles vaccine. Far less have had a second dose. Herd immunity is only reached when at least 95% of the population has had two vaccines. The UN Committee on the Elimination of Racial Discrimination appealed to China on Thursday to investigate all allegations of human rights violations in Xinjiang. The allegations include torture, ill-treatment, sexual violence, forced labor, enforced disappearances, and deaths in custody, according to the committee, which monitors how countries implement the Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Racial Discrimination. The panel, which is made up of independent rights experts, previously expressed concerns about rights violations of Uyghur and other Muslim minorities in Xinjiang when it last reviewed China's policies in 2018. The development follows the release of a report by the UN Rights Office in August, which found that serious human rights violations against the Uyghur and other predominantly Muslim communities had been committed, an allegation that China subsequently rejected. Daniel Johnson, UN News.
Everything can change. Even though the worst thing in the world, I don't know what is that, but it can change too. I believe that.
I'm Laura Quiñones, and I'm delighted to welcome you to Amplify Her, a podcast from the United Nations with support from SoundCloud. We wanted to talk to some of the most exciting women musicians working today, from a wide range of backgrounds and cultures, to find out how they have overcome their challenges and what drives them to continue creating art. Each episode will feature an exceptional artist, some of whom are well-established icons, such as Tunisian singer Emel, whose music was the soundtrack to a revolution. To Elena Murang, a young woman in Borneo who is breathing new life into the traditional rhythms of her country. But we're going to start with an up-and-coming singer and rapper still not out of her teens from Bangkok, Thailand, a country that is not traditionally associated with hip-hop. Her name is Danupa Kanaterakul, but she's best known as Millie. Millie's big break came in April 2022, when the influential music company 88 Rising invited her to perform at the Coachella Music Festival in California. She became the first Thai artist to perform solo at the festival, winning over a brand new audience. However, she has been making waves in her country ever since the release of her debut single, Pak Kong, in 2020. Thanks to witty lyrics in English, Thai, and several Thai dialects, and also for her outspoken personality, she has been unafraid to criticize aspects of her society, which has caused her problems with authorities, but has endeared her to the many young people in her country who have been calling for a change. So here, to kick off the first episode of Amplify Her, is the one and only Millie.
My real nickname is Minnie, like a Minnie Mouse. And Millie is milliliters. And this is from like my dad. He just compared me as a water, like you should be a water, because water can live with everything. We can live in as a rain, we can live in the ocean, we can live in the glasses as a glass of water. Be yourself, but can change to suit with everything, just like that. Maybe I'm gonna get a tattoo to remind me about this forever in the future. I am just a little girl that loves to audition and competition. So I'm just keep doing this for like many years, and then I'm just found that this have a TV show name is The Rapper. Everybody just, whoa, is that you? And I'm just, nah, it's not me. And I have to accept that after, because it's have my face on the TV for real. I really love hip-hop for like many years too, but I'm never trying to write a lyrics or do the rhymes before, but I'm just want to try. So I just do it because I want it. And then just, that's how we start to be a millet. Nicki Minaj is inspiring me a lot. I'm just found her in the YouTube so randomly, and I'm just listen to her music, and I'm just, whoa, what song is this? What the kind of music is this? Oh, it's a hip hop. So I'm just into hip hop so much, and I'm start to learn about it. She teach me a lot. Like, I'm just learn from her music how she used the words, how she used the rhymes, how she used the syllables. I really like that. It's really hyped me every time I listen to it. I always say this, but some of Nicki Minaj fans just don't like me because I didn't follow her Instagram before. I don't know why. So that's the reason that they just don't like me. And I'm just, what? If they hate me because I love Nicki Minaj, I'll let them hate me. I like words. Like, you know, in Thai language, we gonna have like new words every single month. It's very like amazing for me. Like, that's why I want to present Thai language to be worldwide, because I still believe that the words or the language does not have barriers like at all. I can speak only Thai and English. And everything I just learned from Google. I love Asian culture a lot, so that's why I try to speak or learn about it sometimes. And I think it's like a color in the music too. Beauty on me, beauty on me. Beauty on my face is brightest and it's not free. Thai language, we have like four parts in Thailand. They have their own dialect, like Pasalu. I can speak that. I just learned that from my sister. She's a lady boy, and she just teach me about that. When you say, I'm hungry, so in Taiwan say, 陈hiu. So in Tasalu, say, 蓝春流湖. Oh my God, it's so hard to communicate, but I love that. Sometimes we use this language because we don't know other people to know that. Only us can know what we want to say. I pressure myself a lot. Like right now, I'm studying in year 3 in university music, school of music. And I'm trying to pressure myself, like, I want to know a lot about music to, like, improve my skill. Music is like mystery. It's an art that we don't know it's going to happen. Right now, I'm trying to study in piano jazz. Just look different from hip-hop. I think it's the same thing. To the top, to the max. Yeah, everybody clap, 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 clap. To the left, to the right. You know, everything right now, everything can happen. Pressure myself, but be careful to myself that it's not too much. My fans, they are so cute. They never ask me to do this or do this or do that. Somebody will ask, but they cannot expect what I'm going to release next time. That's the way that they said to me. They cannot expect at all. Like, I don't know. She going to release what kind of music? I don't want to guess because she can do everything. Yeah, they just said like that to me because I'm so free to do my own music. I can do whatever I want. That's so great. I have been working with 80 Advising before, like many projects, and they're just a good supporter. And working with YUPP, Yop, my label, and we just like a good friend for like long time, and invite me to the Coachella. They just not invite. It's like I'm a superstar, but not. They just like, Millie, do you want to go to Coachella? What? Coachella? Go for like as a listener? Right? No, performer. You're going to perform at Coachella. What? I think I'm not disturbed at all with Coachella. You know, Coachella is very super big, giant festival that's very, like, everybody want to go there. Me too. I want to go there, but I have to save my money, like, a lot because it's to waste your money a lot to go there. I don't think I deserve that at all. But my labels and ADI are rising, so they just go. This is your change. You have to take this. And my friends just say, just think about it, Minnie. Think about it. If one day you grow up and you have your daughter or your son, your child, and you can say to your child that, your mother have been go to Advising as a performer before. You know that? Just like that. It's look cool, right? So I'm just, okay, just try it. It's my chance. I don't know if they're going to give me a chance for the next years or not. So this is maybe my first and my last chance. I have to take this. So the time is close. And to the due date, I'm going to get into the stage. I'm kind of nervous a little bit, like, oh my God, is it real? You know, I always tell my people that I slap my face a lot, like, to check, this is real, right? Like, oh my God, and this is real. In that day, I slap my face twice to make sure that it's real. I'm so proud of my country. Thais have good food, good culture. My family, I'm so proud since I was born. I love how it's be. I love how it's going. But every time I say about Thailand, I'm not just say in a good way, but I say something fact. Not only just like, oh, Thailand is the base. But I know that it's not just like that. We have something to fix. And we need to speak it out to the world. Because I want to call out, like, we're not perfect, but if we find some way to make my country be better, I would do that. Thailand is now, it's one word that pop up in my head is slow. Like slow with everything, slow with law, slow with how do we fix the problem of COVID-19, slow. We never, like they don't want us to improve our country. They just do something like slow, everything slow, and don't develop at all. Everything is the same loop. We get in the loop every day. If we have a question about the problem in our country, don't say that, don't say that, just like that. Everything can change. Me can change the future. Everything that I can say, everything that I say in this interview can change in the future too. My mind can change, my thought can change. Everything can change. Even though the worst thing in the world, I don't know what is that, but it can change too. I believe that. You can do it from your heart. You can do it for your health. You will be happy. Are you ready? Be like me. It's all the fight. It's emanation. Your motivation, your dedication will be your power. Do it jogging, do it from going to gym. Don't forget to shower, bitch. My fans comment in my platform like, you have to leave this country, Millie. This country is too small for you. I know, they really love me and they want me to like more famous and more succeed, but I don't want to leave my country though. I have my family here and I love my family. I love my friends. People that I love is leave here. I cannot leave. Mm-hmm. So I think maybe we can find a way to go to other country and then come back. Or maybe, so if America can be the center of the music industry in Thailand, why not? We can do that. Maybe, but I will try. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I go. Who am I go and ride? Then it's me. Out of my head, catching vision, ready to see. When me, no makeup. You know, I'm a normal person. My family is not too rich. Not too poor, normal family. We don't have a lot of money to leave my whole family to be there. So maybe you just go there and come back and go there and come back. Even up to the sponsor, if they give me money, I can be there like many months and I will come back to Thailand because I will miss Thai foods and Thai massage. Sprinkle with a crunchy thing, this footy couldn't make a sticky run. You can't eat it in my corral and make me better for the people. It's all right, like my Sophie understands it, like it's giving who's the second car. I'll see the title with it literally. If I can, I just want to make Thai pop or Thai hip hop one of the kind of music that famous. I learned about the genre of music and it have J-pop and I have J-rock from Japan, K-pop from Korea, jazz, rock. Hip-hop a lot, you know, blues. We never see Thai in that picture. So I want to, maybe if I cannot bring the Thai, if I cannot bring my whole country, I can bring just myself like, do you know the kind of music? What kind of music? Millie music. Yeah, that's so good. Like, oh, Millie music. I really like her music too.
That was Millie, the teenage Thai superstar. You can find some of her iconic videos on YouTube, including the famous Coachella 2022 performance. Millie is planning new releases and a global tour in 2023. On the next episode of Amplify Her, we meet a Ugandan rapper who, like Millie, expresses herself in many different languages. Like Millie, MC Jala broke onto the music scene when she was a teenager before dropping out. Now she's having a comeback, filling venues across Europe. Subscribe to Amplify Her to make sure you don't miss this episode. Amplify Her is dedicated to women and girls everywhere, particularly to those whose dreams and aspirations are unfulfilled due to discrimination and oppression. The empowerment of women and girls and the achievement of gender equality are central to the mission of the United Nations. Discover the many ways the UN is fighting for a better future by heading to the UN News website, news.un.org. Amplify Her is hosted by me, Laura Quiñones, and produced by Connor Lennon. Sound design is by Garrett Crow. This episode was made possible by Yup Entertainment and, of course, Millie. Thanks to Mita Hosali, Victor Evans Harvey, Matthew Wells, Mark Petimesas, Fang Chen, Gretchen Corcuera, Takako Nagumo, and Erica Mendez from UN News. And thanks to Shauna Alexander, Emma Lenz, Lauren Holden, and Heather Mundinger from SoundCloud. Amplify Her is a UN News production with support from SoundCloud.
This is the news in brief from the United Nations. Since 2014, more than 50,000 migrants are known to have died worldwide after risking their lives on dangerous journeys, the UN Migration Agency, IOM, said on Wednesday. The tragic milestone was confirmed in a new report from the International Organization for Migration's Missing Migrants Project. In an urgent appeal to governments to prevent further people dying, IOM maintained that little had been done by all countries where migrants either originated, transited, or arrived. The nationality of over 30,000 dead migrants remains unknown. Of the missing migrants whose nationality could be identified, more than 9,000 were from African nations, over 6,500 from Asia, and another 3,000 were from the Americas. The top three countries of origin for migrants were Afghanistan, Syria, and Myanmar. Children account for around 2 in 5 of confirmed cholera cases in Haiti, the UN Children's Fund, UNICEF, said on Wednesday. In an appeal for $27.5 million to save lives, the UN agency warned that 90% of confirmed cholera infections have come from areas where there is a high burden of severe acute malnutrition. This leaves children more vulnerable to cholera and at least 3 times more likely to die from it. Manuel Fontaine, director of UNICEF's Office of Emergency Programs, warned that continuing armed violence linked to Haiti's economic crisis represented a third deadly threat on the Caribbean island nation. Latest government data indicated 924 confirmed cholera cases in Haiti, more than 10,600 suspected cases, and 188 deaths. Humanitarian exemptions to international sanctions are ineffective, inefficient, and superficial, top independent rights experts said on Wednesday. The experts, who include Elena Duan, Special Rapporteur on Unilateral Coercive Measures, said in a statement that the damage done by sanctions to countries barely counterbalanced agreements that allowed food, medicines, and medical equipment through to vulnerable populations. The experts also noted that inconsistencies in such humanitarian carve-outs seriously affected the work of relief agencies and created a feeling of uncertainty and fear. And they insisted that authorized payments to allow humanitarian actors to do their work may still not be processed by banks for fear of violating sanctions. The international community should do more to help relief agencies work within the sanctions regime by addressing problems including over-compliance, said the experts who report to the Human Rights Council. Daniel Johnson, UN News.
You're listening to The Lid Is On with me, Connor Lennon. The UN has just launched an exciting new podcast series called Amplify Her, featuring the voice of, yes, Laura Quiñones. So in case you were already missing Laura's voice after the daily COP27 podcasts, never fear, because there are 10 episodes of Amplify Her in the pipeline. I thought it would be best to let Amplify Her take over today's Lid Is On and let Laura explain instead. I'll be back next week. Enjoy the first episode of Amplify Her.
Everything can change. Even though the worst thing in the world, I don't know what is that, but it can change too. I believe that.
I'm Laura Quiñones, and I'm delighted to welcome you to Amplify Her, a podcast from the United Nations with support from SoundCloud. We wanted to talk to some of the most exciting women musicians working today, from a wide range of backgrounds and cultures, to find out how they have overcome their challenges and what drives them to continue creating art. Each episode will feature an exceptional artist, some of whom are well-established icons, such as Tunisian singer Emel, whose music was the soundtrack to a revolution. To Elena Murang, a young woman in Borneo who is breathing new life into the traditional rhythms of her country. But we're going to start with an up-and-coming singer and rapper still not out of her teens from Bangkok, Thailand, a country that is not traditionally associated with hip-hop. Her name is Danupa Kanaterakul, but she's best known as Millie. Millie's big break came in April 2022 when the influential music company 88 Rising invited her to perform at the Coachella Music Festival in California. She became the first Thai artist to perform solo at the festival, winning over a brand new audience. However, she has been making waves in her country ever since the release of her debut single, Pakong, in 2020. Thanks to witty lyrics in English, Thai, and several Thai dialects, and also for her outspoken personality, she has been unafraid to criticize aspects of her society, which has caused her problems with authorities, but has endeared her to the many young people in her country who have been calling for a change. So here, to kick off the first episode of Amplify Her, is the one and only Millie.
My real nickname is Minnie, like a Minnie Mouse. And Millie is milliliters. And this is from like my dad. He just compared me as a water, like you should be a water, because water can live with everything. We can live in as a rain, we can live in the ocean, we can live in the glasses as a glass of water. Be yourself, but can change to suit with everything, just like that. Maybe I'm gonna get a tattoo to remind me about this forever in the future. I am just a little girl that loves to audition and competition. So I'm just keep doing this for like many years, and then I'm just found that they have a TV show, name is The Rapper. Everybody just, whoa, is that you? And I'm just, nah, it's not me. And I have to accept that after, because it's have my face on the TV for real. I really love hip-hop for like many years too, but I'm never trying to write a lyrics or do the rhymes before, but I'm just want to try. So I just do it because I want it. And then just that's how we start to be a millet. Nicki Minaj is inspired me a lot. I'm just found her in the YouTube so randomly, and I'm just listen to her music, and I'm just whoa, what song is this? What the kind of music is this? Oh, it's a hip hop. So I'm just into hip hop so much, and I'm start to learn about it. She teach me a lot. Like I'm just learning from her music how she used the words, how she used the rhymes, how she used the syllables. I really like that. It's really hyped me every time I listen to it. I always say this, but some of Nicki Minaj fans just don't like me because I didn't follow her Instagram before. I don't know why. So that's the reason that they just don't like me. And I'm just, what? If they hate me because I love Nicki Minaj, I'll let them hate me. I like words. Like, you know, in Thai language, we gonna have like new words every single month. It's very like amazing for me. Like, that's why I want to present Thai language to be worldwide, because I still believe that the words or the language does not have barriers like at all. I can speak only Thai and English. And everything I just learned from Google. I love Asian culture a lot, so that's why I try to speak or learn about it sometimes. And I think it's like a color in the music too.
Beauty on me, okay. Beauty on me, aye, aye, aye. Beauty on my face is bright as and it's not free.
Thai language, we have like four parts in Thailand. They have their own dialect, like Pasa Lu. I can speak that. I just learned that from my sister. She's a lady boy, and she just teach me about that. When you say, I'm hungry, so in Thai we say, Shen Hiu. So in Pasa Lu, we say, Lan Chun Liu Hu. Oh my God, it's so hard to communicate, but I love that. Sometimes we use this language because we don't know other people to know that. Only us can know what we want to say. I pressure myself a lot. Like right now, I'm studying in year three in university music, school of music. And I'm trying to pressure myself. Like, I want to know a lot about music to like improve my skill. Music is like mystery. It's the art that we don't know it's going to happen. Right now, I'm trying to study in piano, jazz. Just look different from hip-hop. I think it's the same thing.
To the top, to the max. Yeah, everybody clap, 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 clap. To the left, to the right.
You know, everything right now, everything can happen. Pressure myself, but be careful to myself that it's not too much. My fans, they are so cute. They never ask me to do this or do this or do that. Somebody will ask, but they cannot expect what I'm going to release next time. That's the way that they said to me. They cannot expect at all. Like, I don't know. She's going to release what kind of music? I don't want to guess because she can do everything. Yeah, they just said like that to me because I'm so free to do my own music. I can do whatever I want. That's so great. I have been working with 80 Advising before, like many projects, and they're just a good supporter. And working with YUPP, Yop, my label, and we just like a good friend for like long time, and invite me to the Coachella. They just not invite. It's like I'm a superstar, but not. They just like, Millie, do you want to go to Coachella? What? Coachella? Go for like as a listener? Right? No, performer. You're gonna perform it, Coachella. What? I think I'm not disturbed at all with Coachella. You know, Coachella is very super big, giant festival that's very, like, everybody wanna go there. Me too. I wanna go there, but I have to save my money, like, a lot because it's to waste your money a lot to go there. I don't think I deserve that at all. But my labels and ADI are rising, so they just go. This is real change. You have to take this. And my friends just say, just think about it, Minnie. Think about it. If one day you grow up and you have your daughter or your son, your child, and you can say to your child that, your mother have been going to Eddie Ed Rising as a performer before. Ah, you know that? Just like that. It's look cool, right? So I'm just, okay, just try it. It's my chance. I don't know if they're going to give me a chance for the next years or not. So this is maybe my first and my last chance that I have to take this. So the time is close, and to the due date, I'm going to get into the stage. I'm kind of nervous a little bit, like, oh my God, is it real? You know, I always tell my people that I slap my face a lot, like to check, this is real, right? Like, aha, oh my God, and this is real. In that day, I slap my face twice to make sure that it's real. I'm so proud of my country. Thais have good food, good culture. My family, I'm so proud since I was born. I love how it's be. I love how it's going. But every time I say about Thailand, I'm not just say in a good way, but I say something fact. Not only just like, oh, Thailand is the best. But I know that it's not just like that. We have something to fix. And we need to speak it out to the world, because I want to call out, like, we're not perfect, but if we find some way to make my country be better, I would do that. Thailand is now, it's one word that pop up in my head is slow, like slow with everything, slow with law, slow with how do we fix the problem of COVID-19, slow, we never... Like, they don't want us to improve our country. They just do something like slow, everything slow, and don't develop at all. Everything is the same loop. We get in the loop every day. If we have a question about the problem in our country, don't say that, don't say that, just like that. Everything can change. Me can change the future. Everything that I can say, everything that I say in this interview can change in the future too. My mind can change it. My think, my thought can change it. Everything can change. Even though the worst thing in the world, I don't know what is that, but it can change too. I believe that. You can do it from your heart. You can do it for your health. You will be happy. Are you better? Be like me. It's all the fire. Determination, your motivation, your dedication will be your power. Do it talking, do it. I'm going to gym. Don't forget to shower, bitch. My fans comment in my platform like, you have to leave this country, Millie. This country is too small for you. I know, they really love me and they want me to like more famous and more succeed. But I don't want to leave my country though. I have my family here and I love my family. I love my friends. People that I love is leave here. So I cannot leave. Mm-hmm. So I think maybe we can find a way to go to other country and then come back. Or maybe, so if America can be the center of the music industry in Thailand, why not? We can do that. Maybe, but I will try. Okay. You know, I'm a normal person. My family is not too rich, not too poor, normal family. We don't have a lot of money to leave my whole family to be there. So maybe you just go there and come back and go there and come back. Even up to the sponsor, if they give me money, I can be there like many months and I will come back to Thailand because I will miss Thai foods and Thai massage. Sprinkle with a crunchy thing, this footy couldn't match a sticky roll. You can't eat it in my corral and make me better. But it's alright, like my Sophie and the sister, like it's giving hold the second car. I see the Tyson with his literature. If I can, I just want to make Thai pop or Thai hip hop one of the kind of music that's famous. I learned about the genre of music. And it have J-pop and I have J-rock from Japan, K-pop from Korea, jazz, rock, hip-hop a lot, you know, blues. We never see Thai in the picture. So I want to be, maybe if I cannot bring the Thai, if I cannot bring my whole country, I can bring just myself, like, do you know the kind of music? What kind of music? Mili music. Yeah, that's so good. Like, oh, Mili music. I really like her music too.
That was Mili, the teenage Thai superstar. You can find some of her iconic videos on YouTube, including the famous Coachella 2022 performance. Mili is planning new releases and a global tour in 2023. On the next episode of Amplify Her, we meet a Ugandan rapper who, like Mili, expresses herself in many different languages. Like Mili, MC Jala broke onto the music scene when she was a teenager before dropping out. Now she's having a comeback, filling venues across Europe. Subscribe to Amplify Her to make sure you don't miss this episode. Amplify Her is dedicated to women and girls everywhere, particularly to those whose dreams and aspirations are unfulfilled due to discrimination and oppression. The empowerment of women and girls and the achievement of gender equality are central to the mission of the United Nations. Discover the many ways the UN is fighting for a better future by heading to the UN News website, news.un.org. Amplify Her is hosted by me, Laura Quiñones, and produced by Connor Lennon. Sound design is by Garrett Crow. This episode was made possible by Yup Entertainment and, of course, Mili. Thanks to Mita Hosali, Victor Evans Harvey, Matthew Wells, Mark Fetimesas, Fang Chen, Gretchen Corcuera, Takako Nagumo, and Erica Mendez from UN News. And thanks to Shauna Alexander, Emma Lenz, Lauren Holden, and Heather Mundinger from SoundCloud. Amplify Her is a UN News production with support from SoundCloud.
This is the news in brief from the United Nations. The UN Human Rights Office expressed deep concern on Tuesday at the high number of executions in Saudi Arabia, which have been happening almost daily in the last 2 weeks. 17 men have been put to death since the 10th of November, ending a 21-month unofficial moratorium on the use of the death penalty for drug-related offences. According to the Office of the High Commissioner for Human Rights, a Jordanian man, Hussein Abu Al-Khir, may be at risk of imminent execution too. His case has been examined previously by the UN Working Group on Arbitrary Detention, which cited grave concerns about his right to a fair trial. In an appeal to the Saudi government to quash Mr. Al-Khir's death sentence, the UN Rights Office maintained that the resumption of executions for drug-related offences was deeply regrettable, all the more so after a wide majority of states in the UN General Assembly called for a moratorium on the death penalty worldwide. More than 40 people have been killed in Iran in the past week amid ongoing protests sparked 2 months ago by the death of Jina Mahsa Amini in custody after her arrest for not wearing her hijab properly. According to the UN Human Rights Office, OHCHR, security officers reportedly responded forcefully to demonstrations in several mainly Kurdish cities on Monday evening, including Javanrud and Saqqez, said OHCHR spokesperson Jeremy Lawrence. He added that two 16-year-old boys were among six people killed at the weekend and that there's deep concern that the authorities have refused to release the bodies of the dead to their families.
With respect to the bodies not being returned to their families, of course that's of great concern to us. What is the motive behind that? I'm not sure. But the families have the right to have the bodies of their loved ones returned to them. It's cruel that they're not.
Protesters have been killed in 25 of Iran's 31 provinces, including more than 100 in Sistan and Balochistan. The UN Rights Office has urged the Iranian authorities to address people's demands for equality, dignity, and rights, instead of using unnecessary or disproportionate force to suppress the protests. Ahead of the International Day for the Elimination of Violence Against Women this Friday, UN Chief Antonio Guterres urged all nations to take a stand and consign such abuse to the history books. Every 11 minutes, a woman or girl is killed by an intimate partner or family member, the Secretary-General said on Tuesday, before adding that even more physical and verbal abuse has resulted from COVID-19 and economic turmoil. Activists who are calling for change and who help survivors of violence need more support, Mr. Guterres insisted, as he called on governments to increase funding by 50% to women's rights movements by 2026. Without positive action from governments to end the scourge, the UN Secretary-General insisted that the discrimination, violence and abuse that half of humanity faces would continue to come at a steep cost. Daniel Johnson, UN News.
COP27 concludes with much homework and little time. We need all hands on deck to drive justice and ambition.
When the rest of the world is watching this space, they are really just asking one critical question. Are we making enough progress compared to where we were last year?
The numbers on our NDCs just don't add up. The transparency of commitments from countries, businesses and institutions will be a priority of the Secretariat.
This is The Lidders On with me, Conor Lennon, recording the actual last COP27 podcast from New York. Yes, I'm back home. Just got back a few minutes ago. Just said hi to the family. You want to say hi?
Hi.
Hello.
I'll be done as quick as I can. Now, I know I said Lara and I had done the last COP27 podcast on, what was it, Friday. But if you remember, our news was that there was no news. No consensus was reached before the pavilions and food stalls were closed down. But finally, early Sunday morning, this morning, we got an outcome document. And I wasn't there. So here's what happened. I had a flight booked from Sharm el-Sheikh on Saturday evening. I spent the last 24 hours or so in airports or up in the air, checking in on developments as best I could on dodgy Wi-Fi. Anyway, I was following what was happening. Back at Sharm el-Sheikh, I could see photos of exhausted TV crews, journalists dozing on the couches outside the big plenary hall, and I was exchanging texts with colleagues in New York and Sharm el-Sheikh, and everyone was getting more tired and more frustrated. And I have to admit, I held up very little hope that we would get an outcome document, because when I left my hotel in Sharm el-Sheikh on Saturday afternoon, things were not looking good. The COP27 president, Sameh Shoukry, held a press conference and he looked pretty exhausted and pretty defeated.
Over the last 2 weeks, I have been following closely the consultations and discussions that have been underway between the parties, efforts to reach a consensus, primarily the issue of loss and damage, the mitigation work program, the global goal on adaptation. We have been working through the night, all of yesterday, with all of the negotiating groups to hear from them directly their perspectives, their interests, where they see a landing zone to deal with these issues so that we can find a path forward and move ahead to reconfirm our dedication to the UNFCCC process and our ability to meet the challenges of climate change. The issue now rests with the will of the parties. It is the parties who must rise to the occasion and take upon themselves the responsibility of finding the areas of convergence and moving forward.
Now, as COP27 President Sameh Shoukry essentially saying, I've done my bit, guys, now it's up to you. And there was an NGO press conference not long after that, and pretty much all of the focus, as it has been throughout this COP, was on loss and damage. Here's Li Shuo, Global Policy Advisor for Greenpeace East Asia.
We have worked hard and traveled quite far over the last 2 weeks, and we have now come to this critical juncture at COP27. This is a very important moment. The world is watching this space. And I think when the rest of the world is watching this space, they are really just asking one critical question, which is, are we making enough progress compared to where we were last year? If we look at, you know, if we look across the world, what happened this year, the severe climate impacts across the world, we need to show solidarity to the global south, in particular the most vulnerable countries. So the world is watching this space and asking, are we delivering this firm and strong political signal by creating a loss and damage finance fund at this COP?
Li Shuo from Greenpeace East Asia. Other NGO leaders made similar calls for a loss and damage fund. And loss and damage, I think it's going to be the big phrase from this COP, like fossil fuel phase down was for COP26 last year. I mean, we were talking about loss and damage almost every day for the past 2 weeks. A quick recap, if you haven't been following every twist and turn, loss and damage in this context refers to the impact of the man-made climate crisis on developing countries, which tend to suffer the most, whilst bearing little to no responsibility for the greenhouse gas emissions that are causing it. They want a fund set up to compensate them for the devastation wreaked by climate shocks, things like floods, hurricanes, droughts. Which sounds fair, right? But it's complicated. For example, which countries should be paying into this fund? Historic emitters like the US and Europe? Or what about rapidly developing countries whose emissions have been rising sharply, such as China or India? And which countries qualify as vulnerable and therefore able to benefit from the fund? Should the fund be linked to emissions reductions, limiting developing countries' ability to improve lives by making use of their gas reserves, for example? Like I said, it's complicated. Anyway, late afternoon, Saturday, local time in Egypt, we started hearing that some kind of overall deal might actually be possible, with language on loss and damage financing, some mention of a fossil fuel phase down, which was introduced at COP26 last year, of course, and that the 1.5 degree target, so keeping global temperatures to 1.5 degrees above pre-industrial levels, would be mentioned, because there'd been some worries that even that wouldn't make it into the outcome document. So, those of us who were still around were waiting for that final plenary meeting, which would put the final seal on the whole thing, but it kept getting delayed and delayed, and eventually I had to head off to catch my plane. And in the airport, I was getting texts and emails, the Wi-Fi is going in and out, and then I had to get on the plane. The plenary finally began on Sunday at around 4:30 local time, and by all accounts, it was a pretty tortuous process. I mean, there were celebrations when the section on loss and damage was gavelled through, because it's taken around 3 decades to get it on the agenda. And now the idea of a fund has been agreed, details to be discussed later, but this is big news. I think it has to be taken as the win from this year, given the pessimism that overshadowed the last 2 weeks. In terms of efforts to keep global temperatures to no more than 1.5 degrees above pre-industrial levels, well, 1.5 is in the document, so technically 1.5 is alive, but there's no real detail on how exactly that's going to happen. There's also been some concern from some quarters about the inclusion of the phrase low emissions energy. Some observers are worrying that could be used as a justification for the exploitation of new gas fields, which are less polluting than coal, but they still contribute to greenhouse gas emissions. So after the gavel came down, Simon Steele, the head of UN Climate Change, summed up the achievements.
We've determined a way forward on a decade-long conversation on funding for loss and damage, deliberating over how we address the impacts on communities whose lives and livelihoods have been ruined by the very worst impacts of climate change. So at COP27, we've established the fund that will provide one pillar of the response required to ensure loss and damage is addressed. The IPCC report that came out in April, written and agreed to by the world scientists, told us that global emissions need to start a downward trajectory by 2025. That's only 2 years away. The IPCC also told us to cut emissions by nearly half by 2030. That's only 7 years away. In this text, We have been given reassurances that there is no room for backsliding. It gives the key political signals that indicate the phase down of all fossil fuels is happening. We have set a work plan for 2023 to help articulate the nature and components of a global collective goal on adaptation and resilience and how it can be structured in a way that feeds into the global stocktake. This opens the door for transformative action to achieve climate resilient development. It will help to break the mindset that for decades has kept us from moving beyond business as usual. There is absolutely no point putting ourselves through all that we've just gone through if we're going to participate in an exercise of collective amnesia the moment the cameras move on. The numbers on our NDCs just don't add up. The transparency of commitments from countries, businesses, and institutions will be a priority of the Secretariat.
Simon Steele, the head of UN Climate Change, also he mentioned initiatives to encourage the financial industry to move funds to investments that support sustainable development and move them away from the fossil fuel industry. And he promised to keep the pressure on throughout the year and hold nations to account. He said that the UN Secretary General wants UN Climate Change to come up with a plan to ensure accountability and transparency in the process. Well, back on Friday, if you can remember that far back, Lara and I went through the UN and UN-backed initiatives that were launched or announced at this COP. They include efforts to curb greenwashing, in other words, unsubstantiated green claims made by companies and cities. Also a plan to help vulnerable countries and people get more warning of climate shocks, such as floods or hurricanes, and a new tool that identifies exactly where emissions are being produced. Lara and my UN News colleagues produced the final story on COP earlier today, and all of the detail of the final outcome is there. Just Google UN News COP27 and you will find it. And finally, here's an excerpt from the remarks recorded by the United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres, who came back to COP for the final negotiations. He welcomes the loss and damage progress, but he pointed out that what's really needed is serious action on reducing emissions.
A fund for loss and damage is essential, but it's not an answer if the climate crisis washes a small island state off the map or turns an entire African country to desert. The world still needs a giant leap on climate ambition. The red line we must not cross is the line that takes our planet over the 1.5 degree temperature limit. To have any hope of keeping to 1.5, we need to massively invest in renewables and end our addiction to fossil fuels. We must avoid an energy scramble in which developing countries finish last, as they did in the race for COVID-19 vaccines. Doubling down on fossil fuels is double trouble. That is why I am pushing so hard for a climate solidarity pact. A pact in which all countries make an extra effort to reduce emissions this decade in line with 1.5 degree goal. A pact to mobilize, together with international financial institutions and the private sector, financial and technical support for large emerging economies to accelerate their renewable energy transition. This is essential to keep the 1.5 degree limit within reach and for everyone to play their part. COP27 concludes with much homework and little time. We are already halfway between the Paris Climate Agreement and the 2030 deadline. We need all hands on deck to drive justice and ambition.
That was UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres speaking at COP27, repeating his call for a climate solidarity pact. He mentioned this at the beginning of COP, which would bring developing and developed countries together to pivot the world towards reducing carbon emissions. You can find that whole video message on the UN News website. Now, that really is it for this COP, but the lid is on. The UN's flagship weekly news podcast will be back on Friday, so please do like and subscribe. Have a great week.
This is the news in brief from the United Nations. At the end of an official visit to South Korea, a top independent rights expert urged on Monday that the country take the regional lead in ending violence against civilians in Myanmar. UN Special Rapporteur Tom Andrews, who reports to the Human Rights Council in Geneva, said that many people in Myanmar continue to oppose the military since it staged a coup in February 2021. Hundreds of protesters died during initial clashes with the military, which continues to hold 54 million people hostage, Mr. Andrews added. Among his recommendations, the UN independent expert called on Seoul to denounce fraudulent elections that the junta is planning next year. The special rapporteur, who is not a UN official, also urged South Korea to impose sanctions on key economic targets associated with the junta. Moreover, he asked South Korea to extend its generous humanitarian visa program, which allows Myanmar nationals to find work, by ruling that all persons from Myanmar residing in South Korea, including irregular migrants, can regularize their status to avoid exploitation and abuse. A key scientific mission is underway, led by the UN Health Agency, to track and update what we know about global health threats, including Disease X. The UN World Health Organization, or WHO, said on Monday that the task will involve updating its list of priority pathogens, ones that cause outbreaks or pandemics, so that investment and research into vaccines, tests, and treatments can be agreed among nations. More than 300 scientists worldwide will look into data on 25 virus families and bacteria, as well as Disease X, which according to WHO is an unknown pathogen that could cause a serious international epidemic. The UN Health Agency published its first list of priority pathogens in 2017. It includes diseases like COVID-19, Ebola and Marburg virus, Lassa fever, Middle East Respiratory Syndrome or MERS, Severe Acute Respiratory Syndrome or SARS, Nipah and Zika. Patents, trademarks and designs reached record levels in 2021, with Asia driving growth in intellectual property, UN agency WIPO said on Monday. The World Intellectual Property Organization indicated that this bucked the trend from previous economic downturns and came despite the disruption of the coronavirus pandemic. Data published in WIPO's latest report indicated that innovators filed 3.4 million patent applications globally last year. This was up 3.6% from 2020, with Asia driving more than two-thirds of requests. China showed strong growth in local patent filings, up by 5.5%, along with India, also up 5.5%, and South Korea, up 2.5%. In the United States, patent filings dropped by 1.2%, in Japan by 1.7%, and in Germany by 3.9% last year. Daniel Johnson, UN News.